mom doesn't call us in the middle of this episode to tell us she was laughing about us talking about boners in public. Today we're going to be talking about Bob Dylan. He is like a legendary person.
He is. I mean, it's a name most people know. If you know the name Bob Dylan, yep. Maybe you don't know what he does, but you know the name Bob Dylan.
Well, if you don't know what he does, he is the leading songwriter of the American folk music revival in the 60s.
Oh.
Big fucking deal.
Okay.
Can he sing now? Hell no. Oh my God. He sounds like he died and somebody like Frankenstein his ass back to life and dragged him out on stage and is making him perform. It's bad. It's really bad. But do we respect his contribution and his importance in music? Absolutely. Will I see him live? I think I'm going to skip out on Willie Nelson's Summer Outlaw Music Festival this year. Because he's bringing Bob Dylan.
I'm
like, dude, you're going to kill the whole vibe before Willie Nelson even goes on. Everyone's going to fucking leave.
Well, at least you get Bob Dylan out of the way first, and then it's Willie Nelson.
Yeah, but there's a cool group like happening before, so you have to kind of get there
early.
Well,
then you get a little bit of a break and go have a hot dog, you know.
Yeah, it's a hot dog. It's a hot dog break.
Yeah, one bite.
One big bite. So go ahead. You can introduce the show, I guess.
Oh, all right. Welcome to Death by Music podcast, folks. My name is Jake.
Hey, Jake.
Hello. And I'm here with Alex.
Hi, Alex.
Yeah. So today we're going to talk about...
It's going to be a fun one.
Maybe. I don't know. We're going to talk about the time that Dylan went electric, which was this huge, big fucking deal because he's always been the acoustic guy.
Right.
And he showed up at this festival and he plugged his fucking guitar in and everybody lost their minds. It was like the end of an era.
Well, wouldn't he have to
plug it in anyways. You're right.
Right. To amplify it so everybody could hear him.
Yeah.
But I get what you're saying.
Well, it does say went electric in quotation marks, but he is clearly holding an actual electric, not an acoustic that is plugged in.
Right.
So this one.
That looks like a Fender.
It does look like
a
Fender.
That's a Strat.
I think it says it on here. I was reading something that said the original guitar that he played at the Newport Folk Festival went up for auction or something. Anyways. When Dylan Went Electric, this is written by Jeff Wallenfelt. It's from Britannica.com, which to me, very reliable source. And they should also not have any typing errors.
Hopefully.
Bob Dylan's performance at the Newport, Rhode Island Folk Festival in 1965 is widely regarded as one of the pivotal moments in the history of rock music. But if there is near consensus on its importance, there is much less agreement on exactly what happened. Rack historians, Dylan's biographers, and eyewitnesses provide varying accounts of the audience's reaction to Dylan's performance, the reason behind those reactions, and Dylan's response. This much is clear. When Dylan took the stage at Newport on July 25th, 1965, he was the leading light of the folk music revival of the early 1960s. Based on traditional American musical forms and steeped in the populist politics of the 1930s, the revival was meshed with the ongoing civil rights movement and thrived on topical songwriting. The pursuit of authenticity lay at the heart of the revival, and as such, it was generally believed that real folk music was played only on acoustic instruments. That's a fair argument.
Right.
Folk purists had little respect for rock and roll, which most regarded as puerile and crassly commercial.
They're not wrong, you know.
In the months leading up to Newport, Dylan, theretofore, the
Wow. That's a new word. It's all one word, too. Theretofore.
Britannica.com.
Interesting,
yes. For learning us some new shit. the quintessential acoustic troubadour had released the partly electric album, bringing it all back home, and had recorded much of Highway 61 Revisited with rock-oriented musicians and electric instruments. The week of the 1965 festival, Dylan's acerbic single, Like a Rolling Stone, was omnipresent on U.S. Top 40 radio. Called electric blues by some and rock and roll by others, it was unquestionably not the folk music for which he was known. Interested in duplicating this electric sound live, Dylan hastily recruited members of the Paul Butterfield Blues Band, along with session pianist Barry Goldberg and keyboardist Al Kooper, who had created the signature organ sound on Rolling Stone, to act as the backing band for his set at Newport. You know that song. What?
I'd have to hear it.
You raised your hand. Yes, Jake?
I was going to say, what's the difference between a pianist and a keyboardist? They play the
same. Pianist probably is playing.
I know he's playing an actual piano, but the keyboardist is playing the same fucking thing.
Yeah, just call them both pianists.
Yeah.
Or just say they're both on keys.
Keys would make sense. I just find that funny. Anyways.
Yeah, that's a good point. I was going to say that song, like a Rolling Stone, is the one where he's like, how does it feel? You know that?
I'd have to hear it.
Like a Rolling Stone. It's a good song. Anyways. Yeah. Back to karaoke. Brandishing a solid body electric guitar, Dylan plugged in with the rest of the band. The set began with Maggie's Farm from Highway 61. Rage Against the Machine does a nice cover of Maggie's Farm.
Oh, really?
Yes, they do.
Huh.
This is where the accounts diverge. Some, notably critic and biographer Robert Shelton, reported that the audience immediately registered hostility and that boos and catcalls like, play folk music, get rid of the band, began at the end of Maggie's Farm and escalated throughout the next song Like a Rolling Stone.
I mean, that's pretty mild.
Yeah, I mean, it would still suck, though, if you're on stage and the whole crowd is like, boo, shut the fuck up, you know? Like,
yeah.
But I somehow don't think that that would be the case. I mean, I know you can hear the difference between an electric and acoustic guitar, but if you're on the ground, if you're in the crowd at a festival that fucking big in this day and age when they didn't have those big-ass jumbotrons, you don't know what the fuck's going on up front.
No.
Like, maybe you can hear the difference, but, like, I seriously doubt, like, the only people who would really be able to watch this happening would be the couple of people in the front.
Yeah.
Everybody else is just trying to fucking survive, man. Like, they're in this big-ass crowd. They're high as shit. They're tripping dick. And they're listening to tunes, man. Like, they don't care. So I don't think everyone was booing. I think this guy was hearing what he wanted to hear.
I don't know. It was enough to be noticeable.
Dylan biographer Anthony Scaduto described the audience's initial reaction as a mixture of scattered booing and applause, but mostly bewildered silence. According to Scaduto, booing and heckling then spread throughout the audience during Rolling Stone, driving Dylan and the band off stage after the performance of a third song, an early version of It Takes a Lot to Laugh, It Takes a Train to Cry. Scaduto cited an interpretation of the event by folk musician Eric von Schmidt that has been echoed by others, notably biographer Bob Spitz, who also reported that some audience members booed as soon as they realized that amplified instruments were going to be used. Bitch, how you gonna hear it then?
But you still loading them and heating them up with all your single shit you've been dropping. You feel me? Loading them up on. It only takes structure. And you know, just paying attention to the climate of the game.
Yeah.
Know what I mean?
So do your homies got a role in your little, you mean?
Yeah, we all artists over here, man.
Y'all
trying,
already?
Yeah, I'm trying. I'm trying to get them on there. Yeah.
Damn,
we all artists, man. You feel me? We gonna have this like.
Bro, me and my man Kyle, we be like, I don't know, we play with this shit.
Don't
right
play
now.
With this
I ain't gonna
shit.
Lie, we play with this shit right now for
oh,
I ain't gonna lie.
Don't play with it,
no. Take that shit serious.
Yeah, that was my argument.
Because they didn't want the amplified
technicality.
They didn't want the instruments to be amplified, or they didn't want amplified instruments. They wanted instruments that were amplified by speakers.
Yeah,
and microphones.
That makes sense.
Electric microphones. They're fine with that. I wish there were. Are there videos of this? Can I watch a fucking video over this?
There might be. What was that thing up at the top?
That was just a photo. This is from 1965. Did they even have videos back then? No, just kidding. I wonder if they were filming stuff like this.
They may have. They're,
it's a huge festival. I would think if they had the resources that they would. But if there were ever any question about what the crowd was doing, it would be settled by a video.
Right.
I guess the thing we're arguing here is at what rate did the boos commence? So actually, it looks like there are a couple of videos up on YouTube out there. And upon reviewing the video evidence, sounds like people were booing more at the beginning and then kind of shut the fuck up as the performance went on. You can hear it after Maggie's Farm. He finishes the song and there's, you know, like a lot of noise coming from the crowd. That doesn't really sound good. Then he brings, you know, this whole band out on stage for like a Rolling Stone. And throughout that, I mean, it's quiet. It's a quiet song to start. And you hear like two or three people booing. And that really cuts through the crowd. But other than that, it's just a bunch of regular generic crowd noise. And then by the time they really get into the song, you're not hearing it anymore. So I get it. It was shocking for some people. A few people booed, and that stood out in people's minds, I guess, after the fact. But yeah, the videos are out there. Yeah. According to Von Schmidt, Dylan's voice was overwhelmed by the band as a result of poor sound mix, which most accounts describe as muddy or unbalanced at best, leading people closest to the stage to call out that they couldn't make out Dylan's words. Can't hear ya. Turn the sound down. Hey, that's fair.
I've seen that happen before. They didn't get the
God. Yeah, they didn't
EQ
get the mix
set
right,
up right.
And,
yeah.
And you can't fucking hear anything. It's annoying. The members of the audience who were farther back said Von Schmidt misunderstood the complaints and responded with booing and jeering, probably based on the belief that Dylan was betraying folk music by going electric. What is certain is that there was booing and cheering, and that after three songs, Dylan and the band had left the stage. According to Cooper, who was at Dylan's side on stage, the performers left because they had rehearsed only three songs, and the booing was primarily a response to the brevity of the set by the performer, who most of the audience had come to hear. There are also varying accounts of what transpired backstage during the performance, but it seems likely that a confrontation took place at the soundboard between festival board members. Folklorist Alan Lomax and eminent folk singer Pete Seeger wanted to cut the electricity. Dylan's manager, Albert Grossman, and Peter Yarrow of Peter, Paul & Mary successfully opposed them. Dylan returned to the stage with an acoustic guitar at Yarrow's behest, according to most accounts, and was greeted by thunderous applause. He performed Mr. Tambourine Man and It's All Over Now, Baby Blue. And as he did so, according to Grile Marcus in Invisible Republic, there were tears in Dylan's eyes. Scuduto, too, described the tears, and several accounts characterized Dylan as shaken and confused. He was probably tripping, too. Cooper, on the other hand, said there were no tears. And so the debate lives on decades after the event. But what no one denies is that folk and rock music were never the same after that memorable day in Newport in 1965.
Hmm.
Okay.
There's a few things going on there.
I was literally
sound
going
issues.
To say the exact same thing.
Yeah, sound issues. Some people are shocked with the electric guitar being up there.
Mm-hmm.
They only did three songs. That seems kind of short.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know how the rest of the show was planned. I would assume they would have more stuff coming out to play and listen to.
Yeah.
You know?
So to me, it sounds like over all of the years past since this event happened, people, and the way that I've heard about this event just in pop culture and music history and stuff is like, oh, when Dylan went electric, it's like, oh, that's when the world went to shit, you know? But
it's like when Metallica cut their hair.
Yeah. Yeah. That's this is our Metallica cutting their hair. But I think people are taking this event that was just technically a clusterfuck and they're making it a cultural thing.
Yeah.
When it wasn't really like that. You know? They're
yeah.
like.
No, I can see that. That's what it sounds like.
People were booing because the fucking. Because the guitars were electric and they ruined our lives. Like, no, I think it's people were booing because the sound guy didn't know what the fuck he was doing. It's the sound guy. It's always the sound guy's fault.
Speaking of which, we just went to see one of our favorite cover bands, Zoso.
Yes, tribute.
Recently.
Tribute.
It was a tribute band for Led Zeppelin. And at the very beginning of the show, the guitarist, it was the new Jimmy Page that they had. He was having some technical difficulties. His guitar kept cutting out.
Yeah.
And the audience at the Norva, I mean, they're a pretty chill crowd.
Mm-hmm.
They understood, but as it happened a few times right at the beginning, and then I could hear a couple people going boo, but it wasn't like anything seriously bad. But they were more upset that the technical, they weren't booing at him.
Yeah, they're not booing at him. They're doing it because
they're booing
if you cheer loudly, no one pays attention to it because you're at a concert. So the only way to get someone's attention is to boo, because then people are like, what the fuck did he just say?
You know, he definitely knew something was up. It was,
and it seemed like his like cables were just
something
fried.
Like that. Something was going on. And then the music stopped. They had to, they finished the song and then they stopped for a little bit. Then you severely offended that poor British guy that was at the show.
Oh my God. I forgot about him. Oh my God.
This guy standing next to me. He was British, so he's speaking with a British accent, and Alex is on my other side,
oh my God,
and she turns and goes, who the fuck is this guy? And of course it's quiet, you know, there's no music playing, and he turns, and he's like, are you talking to me? You know, in his very badly British accent.
A British accent right now? Because
no, he was legit.
You can't do that. Show me your ID. And he was like, no, I'm from Britain. And I was like, yeah, fucking right you are. I forgot all about that guy. I had like a whole ass, but I wasn't even trying to talk to him. I was just doing what I do, which is talk shit out of earshot, I thought. But I was yelling and he fucking heard me. I was like, well, get a load of this fucking nerd. And he was like, are you making fun of me for being British? And I was like, oh shit, you heard
me. Very rude. Nah, he was cool though.
I'm like, what, you got some tea and crumpets? Like, fuck you, British guy, get out of here. Oh wow, that's just I blocked that one out.
Yeah, on top
so
of leaving glitter everywhere, you know.
I made this dude, Jake was so mad at me because in the podcast room we have a little bit of extra table space, and
it's like our podcast studio / arts and crafts room.
Yes. And so I made a dress out of this fucking glittery ass fabric that I found. I did not know it would make as big of a mess as it did. And I got glitter all over the podcast room. So I had to clean that up before
glitter
Cassie came.
Sequins.
Yeah, same thing, basically. And then everywhere that I went that night, I left a trail of glitter. It was like I was a slug, but glitter instead of slime. So the whole fucking floor, like where we were standing.
Yeah, slug. That's.
Yeah. So.
That's a good description.
Yeah.
I mean, we went out to eat too, and like.
God, no,
she left.
Yeah.
She got up to go to the bathroom. And there's a trail of glitter going to the bathroom.
And it, like over, dude, just imagine over the toilets that I was using.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, it was bad. It was everywhere. It was kind of embarrassing,
oh my God.
But also. I felt spectacular. So, yeah, sorry. If you're that British guy and I was talking shit to you, just know I didn't mean it. As most times when I'm talking shit, like when I'm talking shit about Bob Dylan, I don't mean it. He's obviously an impressive fucking guy.
Right.
I think it's really fun to talk shit. But it's all, lighthearted.
It's fun to get back to the old times.
And you know
shit
what?
Shit talking and just taking it as it's all fun.
And speaking
it's
of shit talking,
not meant for anything.
I'm going to shit talk Bob Dylan again a little more. A long fucking time ago, you guys may remember that we were doing a series on musician arrests. And I pulled one on Bob Dylan because he was arrested for looking creepy. And I wanted to save it for when Cassie was here because she hates Bob Dylan. Like, I can at least respect him. Cassie doesn't even respect him. She fucking hates his ass.
Wow.
So I wanted her to read this article. But then she, you know, had her baby and she never came back. It's all about Steve now. She doesn't even care about Bob Dylan. So I'll read it. This one is from ABC, but abcnews.com. New Jersey homeowner calls cops on Bob Dylan 40 years after Woodstock. This is August 14th, 2009. Talk about a complete unknown. Bob Dylan was detained by police in Long Branch, New Jersey last month when a young officer failed to recognize him, police said. The officer proceeded to go to earnest lengths to ensure the hooded, disheveled, rain-soaked music legend was in fact who he said he was. Dylan, 68, one of the most celebrated eccentric artists in American history, was in the area.
So how old is he? He's in his 80s now.
Honestly,
I wouldn't I don't know what the guy looks like. I'd arrest him too.
Yeah, fucking old guy.
Right.
Get out of here.
Just a creepy old dude.
Get off the street. Get back inside. July 23rd is a part of a national concert tour. Dang, so he's there working. In fact, lost on 24-year-old Long Branch police officer Christy Buble. To hear the young New Jersey police officer describe it, the scene was like something out of one of Dylan's epic songs. It was pouring rain. Dylan was soaked and wandering alone, far from the traveling home of his entourage of tour buses. When Dylan wandered into the yard of a home that had a for sale sign on it, the home's occupants became spooked by his appearance and called police with a report of an eccentric-looking old man in their yard. Long Branch
police sure that's
said,
how they described him to the cops. He's very eccentric looking.
Yeah, right. One of the occupants even went so far as to follow Dylan as he continued on down the street. Now, these people just seem like they're harassing him. He's just walking down
at
the road
this
and
point,
it's fucking raining.
At this point, from this perspective, yes.
A publicist for Dylan, who was on his way to a Dylan concert in Fresno, California, told ABCNews.com that he had not heard the story but would look into the incident. But Buble said the man told her he was Bob Dylan. We got a call for a suspicious person, Buble said. It was pouring rain outside and I was right around the corner, so I responded to it. By that time, he was walking down the street. I asked him what he was doing in the neighborhood and he said he was looking at a house for sale. Fucking reasonable. Minding his own business. He's on the sidewalk. Leave him the fuck alone.
Right.
I asked him what his name was, and he said Bob Dylan. Now, I've seen pictures of Bob Dylan from a long time ago, and he didn't look like Bob Dylan to me. Bitch, he's
not
old.
Not 60 years old, Bob Dylan.
68. he was wearing black sweatpants tucked into black rain boots and two raincoats with the hood pulled down over his head. I said, okay, Bob, what are you doing in Long Branch? He said he was touring the country with Willie Nelson and John Mellencamp. So now I'm really a little fishy about his story. I did not know what to believe or where he was coming from or even who he was. We see a lot of people on our beat, and I wasn't sure if he came from one of our hospitals or something. She asked for identification, but Dylan said he had none. She asked where he was staying, and he said on his tour buses. They were parked at some big hotel on the ocean. Buble said she assumed that to be the nearby Ocean Place Conference Resort. He was acting very suspicious. Not delusional, just suspicious. You know, it was pouring rain and everything. Yeah, he's probably fucking tired of talking to you or ass. Following her police training, Buble said she indulged him. Okay, Bob, why don't you get in the car and we'll drive you to the hotel and go verify this. I put him in the back of the car. To be honest with you, I didn't really believe this was Bob Dylan. It never crossed my mind that this could really be him. She made small talk on the ride to the hotel, asking her detainee where he was playing, she said, but never really believing a word he said.
Well, the part of the thing is when you're questioning somebody like this, you're looking for some sort of consistency, right? And
yeah.
He's obviously he probably wasn't, his answers weren't all over the place or
no.
Just randomly or not making any sense. But even at the same point, you don't fully recognize the guy. And I could totally understand, you know, what are the chances that you just picked up Bob Dylan and put him in the back of your cruiser?
But also, like, why is he by himself?
That too. That would also
be
confusing.
Suspicious to me. First of all, how'd you get all the way out here without a ride?
Right.
Why are you just wandering around aimlessly would be my thing.
And it's
like,
raining.
Do you need help?
Right.
Because it kind of sucks ass out here. And, you know, the good thing about those cop cars is the back seats,
they're all rubber.
No, it's like plastic. They fucking
plastic.
They take all that the cushions out so you can sit in it and you're not going to get the seat wet.
No, but you'll be sitting in somebody else's wetness.
A bucket of wet, yeah. For sure. he was really nice, though, and he said he understood why I had to verify his identity and why I couldn't let him go. He asked me if I could drive him back to the neighborhood when I verified who he was, which made me even more suspicious. I pulled into the parking lot, she said, and sure enough, there were these enormous tour buses, and I thought, whoa. Who's asking, came the reply, according to Buble. I was in full uniform, so I say, I'm asking. I'm the police. Eventually, the police were shown Dylan's passport, which she looked at, saw the legend's name, and rather sheepishly handed it back to Dylan's manager. Okay, have a nice day. A police department source said Buble had taken her share of good-natured ribbing from some of the older officers. To really appreciate the story from our end, you have to see Christy, one cop said. She looks like a 16-year-old kid next to this living legend. It was unbelievable. In fairness to Buble, Dylan has a long history of intentionally seeking anonymity, often with hooded sweatshirts and other limited disguises.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. In October of 2001...
Unless you're being actually creepy. Then it's a problem.
In October 2001, he was held up at a checkpoint at Jackson County Exposition Center in Oregon as he attempted to get into the backstage area of his own concert, according to Associated Press.
You know, I think about that all the time. If you're working at a concert venue, not everybody there knows everybody that's performing there. They're just there for a job. And if they're doing security or watching a door somewhere, I wonder how often that actually happens. Like, they don't recognize, they don't know the artist, they don't know what they look like. They're just there doing their job.
I'm sure it happens a lot. I've seen it happen at music festivals before. I was at Welcome to Rockville in Florida, and the Fever 333 was like a newer band, and they wear these jumpsuits on stage. They look kind of like the stuff that Slipknot wears, like
the mechanics,
something like suits, that, or like a, like a prisoner suit, even.
The one piece
like
deal.
Yeah, it's like a jumpsuit. And so there were these three guys who were trying to get backstage, like to the media area, wearing that, and the security person was just giving them so much shit and was like, "No, like, where's your badge? You can't be. You need a badge to be back here." And they were like, "We're in the band."
Fair enough.
And she's like, "You look like you just escaped from prison, bitch! Like, forgive me for questioning you."
No, I mean, doing your job. If you're supposed, I would assume that everybody there has to have some sort of badge on them.
You do. You have your credentials. But you have to think, too, a lot of the, some people, I guess, who work security for these shows are big music fans. But I would think the opposite is true. Because if you're stuck at the gate, you don't get to watch the show. So I don't think the gate people like music at all. They must not. They probably don't know who the fuck any of these guys are.
And also, we know that a lot of festivals and stuff, they source out security. Yeah. So, some of these guys might not recognize a lot of these people, but also at the same time, you need to have your badge with you.
Yeah, it's security's job to be like, I don't give a fuck who you are. I don't care who the fuck you're friends with. Where's your credentials?
Mm-hmm.
So, more power to you,
exactly.
Security guys.
So, yeah, I mean, the officer in the story sounds...
She was nice.
She was... Yeah, she was doing her job, but also not being an asshole about it.
Well, I'm glad she just didn't leave this like poor old man in the rain. I'm glad she at least gave him a fucking ride. All right, Bob Dylan's not so bad. Maybe I'll go to the Willie Nelson thing this summer. I will get a hot dog and I will catch a little bit of Bob Dylan's set. How about that? It doesn't matter. Why am I trying to save face? All the Bob Dylan fans already tuned out and decided they're never going to listen to us again because I don't really like him. It's fine. All right, thank you guys for listening, and rest in peace.
Later.
Death by Music Podcast is written and produced by Alex Motler, Cassie Gardner, and Jake.